Hi, everybody, and welcome to Two Off the First. It is March 30th, 2023. It's good to have you here with us. I am Ryan Ballingy. We've got a couple stories to talk about. We've got one kind of big headline thing, and that's related to the Masters. And we've got a couple other kind of small things coming together, mostly about the Augusta National Women's Amateur, but I do want to get to some comments from Bryson DeChambeau about the rollback and some, seems like some unity among the LIV guys, frankly, a lot of men's professional golfers. But I did want to get into Bryson's comments specifically about how he feels distance should be dealt with, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But first, we're presented by our friends at French Lick Resort, French Lick, Indiana. If you're watching this on video, I've got a little bit of a different background. We're in a different part of my office this week. So I have behind me a big, beautiful canvas of the routing of Augusta National from the 1930s when it was drawn up. It's one of my favorite things in this office, and in honor of Masters Week, I just kind of tilted the chair a little bit and have the camera pointing a slightly different place just for this week, and you know, maybe we'll move it around a little bit 360 over the course of the year so you can see different parts of the office. We'll see. Anyhow, the thing I want to start with is actually a really interesting piece from Joel Beal over at Golf Digest, and the piece looks at the future of Augusta National, the long-term plan for the club. And Beal talks about a 20, 30, 40-year plan for Augusta National and that how that was kind of concocted by Billy Payne, who was the former chairman of Augusta National and chairman of the Masters Tournament. If you're one, you're the other. I don't think there's ever been any separation between the two, at least in my lifetime. If you're one, you're the other. You're the president of the club. You're the head of the club. You are the head of the Masters Tournament. And now that Fred Ridley has been in this role and frankly has taken on some even bigger tasks in a variety of ways with the Augusta National Women's Amateur, with trying to expand what the club has in terms of land and holdings and what to do with it. There's a long-term plan that's been in place. And if you've been to a couple of Masters tournaments, if you've been fortunate enough to do so, and you can kind of hear people talk, and there's a lot of talk that happens at a Masters tournament about the future of the club kind of does come up, and there are lots of whispers, and who knows what's true and what's not, but it's fair to say that Augusta National has a really good handle that this tournament makes an incredible amount of money for the club. And they have taken the money that they have made from merch and ticket sales and rights fees and all of those things, and they've put them back into the club and the tournament. Obviously, they're not lining their own pockets, the members' pockets, with it. Everybody who's a member at Augusta National has more than enough money. So that's not the issue. The issue is what to do with that money to make the tournament better, to make the club better, to make the city better. As Beal pointed out, Fred Ridley has really taken an interesting approach to the city of Augusta to try to make the club feel like a good public steward to the place where it is, because the club has so many national members, international members, that they are just kind of coming into town, very few local members to Augusta. So for them, the club, they need to kind of maintain a good relationship with the town as they buy up large swaths of it, as they have over the years, because Billy Payne was a real estate attorney and obviously knew law very well, knew that kind of building up infrastructure of the tournament would take time. You'd have to purchase private land. So they've done that over the years of the neighborhood and turned that all basically into a parking lot for Masters patrons. They bought stuff on different sides of Augusta National, and ultimately they may be able to have the land to do a bunch of different things. And so in this plan, Beal talks about, and I've heard this before, the idea that there could be accommodations on site for Masters Tournament contestants, Augusta National Women's Amateur contestants, given the turnover there the week before, and then also for media members who could stay on property. And the idea behind this and the parking and the idea of taking and developing a gate directly to Masters parking from I-20 is that the private market that is developed in Augusta National or Augusta, Georgia, around Augusta National is not something the club really likes. Take, for example, ticket sales. So there's obviously a secondary market for ticket sales. Those tickets can sell for five figures, depending on what ticket it is, what day it is, whether you're getting into like the Berkman's private stuff, all those different things. And the club has tried very hard to crack down on that. It's not easy to do, but they have tried to crack down on badge holders selling or renting their badge away for a day. They've tried to come up with RFID and tickets so that they can know who is coming in and whether that ticket's been resold. And if it's resold, then you don't get the tickets again. So they've tried to kind of do that. They've tried to come up with this parking solution in hopes of not having patrons have to go into neighborhood lots and pay $50, $100, $150 a car to park to go to the Masters. They think it's enough of an expense to come to the tournament, and you're probably going to spend a whole ton of money on merch and food and all that stuff. They don't want you to spend more than you have to outside the gates. And they also think that having a hotel industry that gouges people for effectively 1 week per year is not ideal. And they don't want people having to spend, like I did the last time I went, it's been a while since I've been, but I think it was $500 a night to stay in the Econo Lodge, which would normally go any other week of the year for $80. But because it's the Masters, everything's multiplied huge. Same thing's true for all the golf courses in the area, and that extends out toward Aiken, South Carolina, which is about 45 minutes away, where I have a membership to Old Barnwell, was just down there last week, and there has been talk about, do you open up that club to Masters patrons, Masters VIPs, wealthy folks who want access to a private club, place to play while they're down at the Masters? A lot of clubs do that. Augusta can't really cut down on that because they're not going to let people play at Augusta National, obviously. But there is this whole cottage industry that sits around 1 week a year, whether you can rent a house for way too much money, or a hotel room for too much money, or play golf for too much money, or park for too much money, or eat for too much money, above and beyond what you would normally see in Augusta, Georgia. And that's great for the city of Augusta. And one of my friends, Deke Copenhaver, who used to be the mayor of Augusta, Georgia, has obviously seen the benefits of that in terms of the development of the city and what that means the other 51 or 50 weeks of the year that the Masters is not being played or the Augusta National Women's Amateur is not being played. But it sounds like the club has aspirations of expansion, and they've done a whole lot of work on the grounds this year. Obviously, they spent about $20 million to get acreage from Augusta Country Club right next door so that they could expand number 13. So they could expand it by just 40 yards for truly 1 week a year, because you're not playing the Masters tees the rest of the year. And they are willing to purchase property for their exclusive purposes. And that could mean more exclusive VIP stuff. That could mean more hospitality. That could include more buildings like banquets and steakhouses for members and things like that. Because they've got the money. They can do it. But there's also been long talk of there potentially being a second course at Augusta National. That they could have that course specifically for the Augusta National Women's Amateur. That right now they play the first two rounds of Champions Retreat, which is in Evans, Georgia. It has become a kind of a revered place in a very short period of time for this tournament because it is an important connection to this tournament. And so the players have gotten to know it. The 72 amateurs that compete every year have gotten to know Champions Retreat. And it's a lovely place and it has its own membership. But Augusta National could put money into building their own second course and maybe, instead of having a course that's closed to membership about six months of the year, they could have a club that's open with a second course more of the year. So you could have people come in, you could have members bring in guests and things like that, and maybe you are allowed to kind of have those resources to Augusta National while still having a place members could come in and play and bring guests. That could be something that comes up too. Now, who knows if all of this happens, of course, but they did make the changes to the par 3 course. There were big changes made to the par 3 course to make it better for viewability, to modify a couple holes slightly, it seems like, but we'll see that next week and get a better handle on that. But they're willing to put the money into the Masters because, frankly, Augusta National is Disneyland for 40,000 people when they come to the Masters tournament. They spend a ton of money on merch. They spend plenty of money on very well-done concessions, no matter what you think of each part of the menu or your favorite thing is. They do a great job with it. Customer service is very, very good there. And they want to be able to use their influence to expand their reach of the tournament and their tournaments because they've got Drive, Chip, and Putt and the ANWA. So it's a really interesting piece from Joel. I think it's worth reading, worth looking at. Some of it, you know, you never know what's going to, the future is going to bring. And Augusta doesn't exactly announce their plans. They typically don't. They only tell you about the stuff you need to see. The other stuff, you kind of have to figure out and talk to some people and find a little bit, do a little bit of digging to get that information. But this rumor of a second course has been out there for a long time. I think it's always an interesting idea of how would you beat, and you can't, I don't think that you can, Augusta National's original course, right? Alistair McKenzie did an incredible job, and with Bobby Jones. And so how are you going to frame having a second course? Because it's always going to be probably less than what you've got for your Masters Tournament course and for the ANWA course. So who do you have do it is the other question. Because depending on when you do it, who's still alive? Think of all of the great architects right now and the ones who get the most jobs. Gil Hance is younger, but if you do it in 20 years, he's going to be much closer to the end of his life than the beginning. Coren Crenshaw may not be with us any longer in 20 years. Then who are the next great architects after that? Well, you've got Kyle France and Mike DeVries. Is Tom Doak still with us? I don't know. I mean, I don't want to be morbid, but if you're trying to think about who would design the second course at Augusta National, you would think it would be a big name, and you'd think it'd be a big name that's established. Well, it takes a long time to establish yourself in golf course architecture. So do you go after someone sooner and have it done in the next decade or 20 years? What does that look like? And if you do it in 20 years, do you call in Tiger Woods and do it? Because it's not like Jack's going to be around. It's not like Gary Player's going to be around. Tom Watson, Nick Faldo's done some design. You know, those guys aren't going to be around. And I'm not convinced that Augusta National will be that interested in contracting with a former champion to do that course just because. I think they would want it to be as organic feeling of a development with an architect's architect as they could possibly do. So very interesting story, worth kind of salivating over, thinking about on the eve of the Masters. But it was just really cool to watch, read. Take your time, go over to golfdigest.com, check it out today. You can kind of scan through it while you're vegging out on Zoom meetings or meetings in person, and you'll get a good experience out of it. Okay, second story for today. Bryson DeChambeau, LIV Golf Orlando. Not a fan of the rollback. Now, that's not news. He came out pretty quickly and said this was a horrible idea, or so he thinks. And I think the newsworthiness here is his willingness to talk about what he thinks the solution is to distance, because he's kind of part of the problem, right? If you think about it that way. He obviously bulked up. He went and chased speed. He went and did things that, frankly, you can't roll back, right? You can't roll back bulking up. I mean, you can personally, but you can't tell someone they have to be a certain proportion. You can't roll back the ability to swing harder, because you can always pursue that. You can always pursue power, and more players are pursuing power, even amateurs and recreational players like you and me. I mean, they use different systems of weighted clubs, and they gain speed, and they've pursued that. That's not going anywhere. You can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. And the data that we have, we've talked about this, that we know from TrackMan and optimization and all of those things, we know from ShotLink that hitting it longer is generally better than hitting it straighter, if you think about it in those terms. None of those things are going to go away. But Bryson obviously has embraced this, and he's kind of backed off of it just a little bit, it seems. I mean, he's a little less bulky, doesn't swing quite as hard, dealt with some injury stuff. But he talked about, ahead of the tournament this week in the Orlando area, what his thoughts on it, kind of expounded on a little bit more. So I wanted to get into those. He says, quote, "I don't think bifurcating the rules of golf isn't necessarily a great thing," double negative. "I personally think that as we look at the golf courses, what matters most is how it's set up. Look at Marion." He's talking about the 2013 U.S. Open. "It is the classic example when Justin Rose won it over par, and it was 6,900 yards. Now, that's going to be an example I think a lot of people think about in this debate. And 10 years ago, really it was a little bit more than that, when I was doing the 19th Hole Golf Show podcast, I remember having a conversation with Mike Davis, and I probably still have it saved somewhere, about this idea about how you would set up Marion to account for the modern golfer, modern player. And I mean, no one even thought like Bryson's approach to golf was a thing then. The biggest approach might have been slightly earlier in the decade when Vijay was basically creating the notion of bomb and gouge. And then Bryson took it to the uber level in the 2020 U.S. Open with very deep rough at winged foot and still managed to just overpower the golf course. But when I talked to Mike Davis about this, you know, a little over a decade ago, he suspected it could be the last time they have the U.S. Open at Marion because of what they had to do to trick it up. to get it to be playable. And he didn't know what the outcome was going to be, but it turned out obviously over par. But the idea that having to grow rough around bunkers and not even let the ball go in the bunkers themselves from fairways was the idea that you wanted to make it so difficult, and frankly you take skill out of it when you hit from deep rough. And that's, I think, the thing that comes up so often in this rollback debate, at least among people who watch pro golf. They go, well, grow the rough, make the grass longer. Well, as it turns out, the skill in golf is greatly diminished the longer the rough gets. Because at a certain point, and thicker, at a certain point, you just can't do anything with the ball by volition, except hit it as hard as you can and hope the grass doesn't twist your club, hope you make okay contact. Very much lie dependent. So there's not as much skill involved. And the pushback on the rollback is not that we want to diminish skill by growing rough. That's the old way of doing the US Open. They want to be able to create golf course setups and championship setups that allow for skill, that allow players to hit from fairway lies and tighter lies and things like that, and use the original architecture of the golf course, not tricked up architecture through rough and deep grass. So Bryson is willing to play from deeper rough lies because he can hack out of them. But if he weren't as long of a hitter, he would be unhappy about that. And he'd be one of those guys like Corey Pavin, who used to complain when it was a 260 carry to get to the fairway, and he couldn't even get to the fairway sometimes. And he'd go, well, I have to drive it into the rough. I have to hit the walking path to even have a chance. Well, we're not there anymore in golf. Obviously, the equipment has improved, and players are stronger, and there's a bunch of other factors. But the equipment allows for players to swing harder and kind of take any reasonable carry out of it. So here's his idea of how to set up a golf course, because he says better architecture, better design will make it a championship test for players of his skill level. He says, quote, if a whole golf course was 10 at Riviera, that would be amazing. It would be so diabolical and unique and difficult and yet still fair if you play the right shot. I still think there's more to go in designing golf courses than designers think right now. End quote. Oh, gosh, that's such a bad take. That's so remarkably bad. I think people have started to kind of come around to the idea, not that 10 at Riviera is bad, it's a really fascinating hole, but that it doesn't really reward shot making the way it's currently constructed. Because the green is so small, and because the way you play the hole now is you hit toward bushes and you hope you hit the green and you hope you miss left. And if you miss right, you're dead. If you miss short, depending on the pin, you might also be dead. And it just doesn't, it's not as thoughtful of a hole as we think it is now. It just, you got to go for it. So there's no decision about laying up. You have to go for it, even though Justin Thomas seems to just frankly believe the opposite of that, much to his dismay and despair. But the 10th hole at Riviera is frankly not as good of a hole as it might have been in a different era, maybe even 10 years ago, because the way that is played has changed. So I don't think Bryson knows a whole lot about architecture, just a guess. But you can't just have holes where you just blast driver everywhere, because that's kind of what golf is now. You just blast driver everywhere, and then you try to get up and down. You need to be a little bit more thoughtful than that, and I think it's kind of interesting that his notion of good architecture is just a drivable par 4 that he can hit with a 3-wood. I don't get that. But Bryson did bring up something about the manufacturing. Quote, I think you're going to have a bigger problem with the manufacturers. The players aren't going to be happy about it, at least most of them, but the bigger problem is the manufacturers. I don't think you're going to get those manufacturers to pay to change the golf ball. It's going to cost them a lot of money to re-engineer, retool. I know the process, and it's very, very expensive. For them to do that, the USGA and the governing bodies are going to have to pay for that, and if they do, then fine. It's my belief it would be difficult to get them to change, end quote. Now, that all said, Bridgestone Golf, which supplies golf balls to World Long Drive, which he participates in, said, hey, we'll figure it out. They'll do what they got to do. I think the only one really balking at all of this, at least very publicly, is Titleist. TaylorMade's come out with a response. I don't even know if I've ever seen one from Callaway on this, to be truthful. Mizuno makes golf balls. I don't think I've seen anything from them publicly. But I think the general notion here is that the manufacturers already know how to make balls that are rolled back. The USGA asked them to do this 10 years ago. So I don't think he's really got a good point here. But I think he kind of disqualifies himself with his bad views on architecture. So we'll leave it at that and go from there, I guess. I did want to touch on something very briefly, outside of the two stories. I did want to touch on the first day of the Augusta National Women's Amateur. Rose Zhang, who's the best female amateur player in the world. She's number one. It's not even close in my view. She's won, I think, 9 times collegiately in a very short span. Shot 6 under 66. It's the lowest round ever recorded in the Augusta National Women's Amateur. Yes, it's a champions retreat, which is not as hard as Augusta National. I get all of that, but it feels like this could be her crowning moment. Who knows? But this could be close to the end of her amateur career. I mean, she's an incredible player. I think she's going to be a very successful professional and carries herself that way. Already knows how to win. That's not kind of that kind of player where you did well in college, but you never really won enough. She wins all the time. She's a really, really good, great asset for the Stanford team. It was great that she even bothered to play college golf. She didn't have to do that, but I'm very interested to see where she winds up this week. I think she's probably the headliner. The other is probably Anna Davis, who's the defending champion, which I'm kind of bummed she's not wearing the bucket hat this week. She's wearing a visor. I obviously can wear whatever you want, but I thought the bucket hat was awesome last year. Bummer it's not back. But she had a 4-stroke penalty applied to her after the round yesterday, and it's unfortunate, but there was a model local rule used yesterday for preferred lies because of the conditions on the ground, and they could use lift clean in place. Lift clean and cheat, if you want to call it that, but you could basically use lift clean in place in closely mown areas, largely meaning the fairway or green surrounds. And she did it in the rough on the first hole twice. And unfortunately, once they realized that, they had to give her 2-stroke penalties for each occurrence, meaning she added 4 strokes to her score, turns a 72, which she fought back from pretty well into 76. She said, quote, little rough start to the day, but that's all right. It happens. It's a learning experience. Unfortunate situation for Anna Davis, but hey, she handled it really well. I think that's the best you can really do in that situation. Obviously, you're going to fume it yourself. Might fume a little bit at someone else in your group, but hey, it comes down to you when it comes down to the rules. And she handled it pretty well for the mistake that might frankly cost her a chance to defend, but she still leaves herself, 10 back. I mean, that's not impossible in 2 rounds to make up. But get to the cut today, top 30 in ties, and then who knows what happens. There always seems to be some drama at Augusta National in the final round of the ANWA. So you never know. Put up a good number today and see what happens. All right, that's going to do it for us today on 2 at the First. Thank you so much for watching or listening to the show. We'll be back tomorrow with our final show of the week on Friday, and then we'll come back with a fresh slate of shows next week celebrating the Masters Tournament. We'll go over everything around ANWA and the VTO and all kinds of stuff like that. But our focus is going to be on the Masters Tournament all next week from this lovely little background that we have for the office. I will be back tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. We'll catch you next time on 2 Out the First.